Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa. So glad you're dialed in today. I have a really fascinating conversation to share. But before I dive into that, I just want to mention that my new-ish webinar is up and available on demand. How to want sex more or help your partner too, right? It's really tackling the five biggest mistakes that might have you stuck accessing desire. So desire discrepancy is the number one complaint or difficulty with a couple, even though it's universal, but struggles around differences in desire. So this webinar is really meant to target the kinds of things that are blocking your access to desire or your partner's and what you could start to do instead, different ways you can think about it and approach it. So you can sign up at intimacywithease.com/masterclass, and I hope you will do that. Today's conversation is diving into, well, in a broad scheme, it's about letting in all the parts of ourselves, that every part of ourself is a gift. It's a matter of dosage. It's a matter of circumstances and situation, how we use it. But we're going to talk specifically about the effects of sexual abuse. And part of what happens, according to Benson Fox, the coach that I'm interviewing today, is we will dismiss parts of ourselves or refuse to deal with this thing, and it gets all bundled as bad because, of course, the experience of abuse is bad. There is nothing about it that is good. There is nothing about it that's justified. There's nothing about it that's positive. And yet, people can have some experiences of positive feelings, of feeling special or chosen or physical pleasure or things like that, and can be incredibly confusing. There can be shame associated with this, and we banish those parts because how can we accept those within the context of such a horrendous act or behavior, right? So he's going to talk about the phenomenon of putting all this stuff away, of refusing to listen to those parts, the impacts that it has for us later in life, and part of what can become a healing journey if this has happened to you or someone you love. I hope you get a ton out of it. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So Benson, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, my honor. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your work in general and then how it relates to people's sex lives.
For sure. So let me just give you a little background. So I'm a psych major. I'm currently a second year in Adelphi University's School of Psychology doctoral program. And I practice as a transformation coach and currently work as well at Brooklyn College Personal Counseling Center as a therapist extern. My general work, what I help people do is help people realize that they don't need to let go of any part of themselves, how every single aspect of yourself, every facet, every strength, every weakness, etc., are all gifts from God, and they're all meant to be channeled and used in the right dose and context. So I like to give the example of like, if someone gave you like a wedding present, they gave you like a set of knives. would you say, oh, they gave me something neutral and I could use it for good and bad? I mean, technically, yes, but it's another term for it is a gift.
Yeah.
That's another term for it. And you can misuse a gift and go around stabbing people. But that was not the intention of the gift. The fact you can misuse it doesn't make it really neutral. So I think every part of us is a gift. And there is imbalance. And imbalances, that's what I help people correct in their lives, is help them find the right balance, the right context, the right dose of every aspect of themselves.
So what are some aspects of ourselves? You know, there must be a zillion of them. But what comes to mind for aspects of ourselves that we tend to think we're supposed to get rid of, you know, that we have to transform into seeing as a gift?
anger, shame, depression, self-doubt, the list goes, anxiety, self-hatred. Yeah, the list is quite exhaustive. Yeah, I mean, the reason why some of it has to do with societal messaging, that there's nothing to fear but fear itself.
Right. Meaning
fear is bad guy. Or things like anger is a poison that hurts the vessel more than the one that's poured on. Meaning there's a lot of messaging from society that demonizes our emotions.
Okay. So how does something like, my ears sort of peaked on shame, because so many people have sexual shame, raised to feel ashamed or things have happened that they're ashamed about, or what that turns them on they're ashamed about, or whatever. So how is shame a gift versus something that we should really transform into something else?
Yeah, it's everything's a gift, including shame. Every part of ourselves is our advisors, their communications. So when you come from this perspective, each one is advocating for one need that you have. One of our needs is to enforce our own boundaries, boundaries that are there to protect our value systems. So that's the purpose of shame. Shame is letting us know that we've just violated one of our values, something that's important to us. So we can't just rely on the input of others, which would be shaming.
Right. Okay.
But we need to have an internal system, something that lets us know that we've just crossed one of our own lines, and therefore to take corrective action to fix that.
Okay. But that's sort of based on the idea that we have our own internal lines already that have been evaluated and chosen, as opposed to, a lot of people are raised given these lines or these messages. They haven't chosen those for themselves, right? So then the shame might be misplaced.
Well, they have chosen to accept the messages from their parents and society, wisely so, because when you're inside a family system or society or culture, if you choose just to reject everything, they're going to ostracize you. You're going to be kicked out of the group.
Right.
So part of being a member of a group is to accept those things. But what I think you're bringing up, which is really important, is that you need to, at some point in your life, usually when you're somewhere between the age of 18 to 30 years old, go through a process of reevaluating which groups you want to associate yourself with, number one. And number two, which belief systems of the groups that you're currently a member of are things that you've evaluated and decided to be true for yourself, and which ones haven't. And then make the pros and cons, risk, reward, cost, benefit analysis of each one to see if it really resonates with you as something that's true.
Okay. So if somebody's got shame, that's sort of a legacy of not having done that work, we could evaluate those belief systems, those choices, right? But if you've decided, hey, I don't want to be doing X, and then I feel ashamed when I do it, that's an appropriate internal system, right? To get us back in line.
Correct. But here's the thing, is that it's not quite that simple, because
it isn't.
No, I wish it was. No, that's the right structure, but there are things that could create exceptions to that.
Okay.
And that is that if we have unprocessed shame that we have chosen not to listen to it, then when we have a parallel experience of shame regarding something else, then the amount of shame we may experience may not be proportionate to the amount of shame that would fit for the current situation. So for example,
example, please, because that gets okay. A little convoluted.
I'm happy I had that same instinct there. Let's say a person has shame regarding having sex with someone, right? So it could be that some of it is because they believe that shame is only out of wedlock, and before that is something that violates their values. Okay. But now it could be the level of shame they're experiencing from that is not only the shame that of violating that value. It could be it's the shame of the entire shaming of sex in general from society. It could be increasing on top of that, the shame of the parents' sense of shame that they have towards their own sexual lives that gets transferred to them, and the transfer of the burden of all the shame that everyone around them has been carrying with them that they have gladly and happily accepted upon themselves. And now it's being brought to the surface. And it sounds like, oh, this is the right shame that we talked about in this podcast. Yes, there's going to be a part of it that is, but then it's going to be in many ways an overreaction of unprocessed shame that's surfacing.
I get what you mean. They're really swimming in a shame stew, like which ingredients are chosen and which ones are legacy and could be evaluated and shed once that's done.
Well, everything needs to be processed. So shed, I don't know what you mean by shed, but yeah, everything needs to be heard and respected and integrated, received in order for it to be something that's trying to dominate your mind.
Yeah.
It will keep trying to communicate it to you until you receive it. And then it will be integrated with the rest of the voices. So it won't be quite as, maybe you want to say intrusive or dominant or however you want to say it.
Yeah, I guess what I meant by shed was, wow, if your culture growing up taught you that sex was shameful or sinful or bad or something, you might choose that's not a belief system I'm going to accept anymore. So, you know, hopefully we can take that part of the ingredient out of that shame stew or that our current experience, right?
Yeah.
All right. So what are some other ways this whole idea relates to our sex lives? I mean, I keyed in on shame because that comes up so much, but what other kinds of things get in the way?
A person can have a negative sexual trauma. Let's just define terms. So trauma would be an overwhelming aspects of metaphorical parts of yourself that get activated and infused with energy and purpose, but in a way that you're not able to or unwilling to process them. So what does that mean? So let's say a person gets physically abused. So what they're going to experience from that, or sexually abused, what they will feel from that is a sense of being of extreme disempowerment, helplessness. There'll be many of those: shame for not fighting back, or shame for having a freeze response. But there will be also positive facets to every single experience. Has positive and negative facets to it, as terrible as that may sound.
Yeah. So you're going to have to elaborate on that one, because I imagine people are saying, "What do you mean that was positive?" Right.
Right. So it's not that the experience was positive. It is a terrible thing. There's nothing justified. This isn't in the realm of justification.
Yeah.
This is in the realm of processing the experience. There's nothing here that makes it, oh, so there was, the person liked it a little bit, so therefore it's okay. No. That's not the direction. It has been used in that way. So I think that's why people may have a defensive response to this, is that it is sometimes used in that way. And many abusers, one of their gaslighting that they use for especially young abusers is that you like this. This makes you feel special, right?
Yeah.
And there's an element of truth to that. They abuse this truth to then justify it and leverage it against the person abused to perpetuate this and to protect themselves from being prosecuted and being told against by like law enforcement, et cetera.
Yeah. All right. So what is positive about at least processing then the trauma? I guess that's where you're going.
Right. So every single experience will have positive and negative assets. It's not just talking about sex. It's talking about anything. I think being murdered there'll be a positive, and it's not positive like in a rosy, like this is a wonderful thing. Not like that, but like there is every single thing, every single decision, every single choice, every single result will have a cost and a benefit to it. And I believe that in order for us to process our experiences, there's a part of us that feels the benefit, and that part needs to be heard as well. Because when we go through an overwhelmingly negative experience, meaning an experience that violates so many of our needs, the reaction is to shut out the parts of the experience that are positive. And by the way, the same thing is true in the reverse. When we have overwhelmingly positive experience, the tendency is to shut out all the parts of us that want to hear the negative side of things, right? Why did they come late to my birthday party? What was with that? But we're, oh, don't be a complainer. Don't be, just shut up the negative voices that also deserve to be heard.
All right. So what are some of the positive voices here? And let's take in a sexual abuse kind of situation.
So let me just say potential, just to be a little more careful.
Yeah. Okay. Potential, right?
Potentially, it can make the person feel very special that they were chosen. They were seen as attractive. It could be that the physical sensation on their skin had a positive, there was a positive feeling to it. It could be that they had some type of forced or et cetera, orgasm, et cetera, that create, at least biologically, a dopamine rush, et cetera, inside of them. And that part, there's a part of them that says that felt good and it feels good to feel special or et cetera. Not that these are automatically, but there will be something positive that a person will feel. And I believe that this could be a core, this can be a core of some people's intimacy issues when they get abused, is that the voice that said that was good has been shut up because we don't trust you anymore because you're saying that felt good, but that was a terrible, terrible thing. And I felt so terrible when that happened. So we don't trust you that touch feels good anymore. Mm. And we don't trust you that when someone looks at me and says I'm attractive, that's a positive thing. That's a good thing. That means that we have a potential for procreation, for emotional intimacy. It creates a lot of possibilities for me, stability, support. So now being seen as attractive is dangerous. understandably so. But because those voices that see the positive are not being processed, now there's this pervasive distrust of those parts, and those parts are shut down. And we can't just, like a light switch, just turn them on and off as we want them to. We either listen to them or we don't. And right now, the choice has been to turn them off because we felt they misinformed us in that previous experience.
Yeah. And I think I'm following. Part of what happens too is if we have a horrendous experience like that, first of all, people tend to feel ashamed that there was something positive, right? Yes. And so it's like, we've got to banish that. That can't be okay. There can be nothing, no positive experience or feeling or thought. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I get where it's such a fine line, right? Because of course it's a horrendous experience, but people do sometimes feel special or feel pleasure or feel connected or didn't realize till much later there was something wrong with it, all those different things. And then it's got to be bundled up as all bad, right? And then we're banishing that.
Yeah, because here's the danger. There's a few dangers. One is to justify it. And now I'm just making clear, there's no right, element right. of justification. But here's the other piece is that it kind of, when we see something positive, I mean, I guess it's the same thing, just in different words, but it kind of makes us, that do we need to get rid of it? So once it's like, if I make it a no-brainer, it's like there's only costs to this thing, then it's, of course, you stay far away from that. But if there are benefits too, then suddenly it becomes a little blurry. It's like there's costs and there are benefits, just like all other decisions, right? So the blurriness of it for many people takes away some of the protection from putting yourself in similar situations where that can when that can happen to them. So this like kind of being drawn to it because there's some, it's this gray zone, right? This cause and benefit. So it's not a gray zone, but every single, or everything's a gray zone, depending how you want to look at it.
right.
But I don't see it as a gray zone, meaning it's a terrible thing to be abused and you should do everything you can to protect yourself from that and to prosecute the people who have done that to you.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that being said that justifies it.
Right.
At all. This is just a sense of your own individual work of being able to, as you said, to kind of unshame many of the parts of yourself to build back the trust. So that way you can access them for yourself because the source of your own wisdom will be listening to every part of yourself. And yeah. That will create the ultimate optimization, wisdom, success, happiness, fulfillment, serenity in your life will be to the degree that you're able to process and listen to every part of yourself, including the ones that are uncomfortable to hear from.
How do you work with people to do that? Like how, you know, given the statistics, plenty of people listening have had some sort of sexual trauma. And, you know, I don't know if it's a rape, it's probably a different situation than somebody, you know, abused by a family member where there might be some positive relationship or some parts of yourself like you're describing. But how do people start to unbundle that instead of thinking that was all bad? I got to cut those voices off. How do we welcome those back? Jessa here, just taking a quick break. Thanks for listening. Are you interested in being a guest on the show? I'm always looking for people with expertise to share that could enrich other people's sex lives. And I'm also interested in hearing from people who have transformed their own intimate relationship and would want to share their story with my listeners. So if you've got something to contribute to the discussion and want to see about being featured on an upcoming episode, please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com. And check out the Be a Guest details. You'll find everything you need there.
First thing is that current research shows that overwhelmingly sexual abuse happens from people who are closest to us.
Yeah.
Family members, etc. So it's almost a little bit like a caricature. You know, it's exaggeration to like when that someone will just come over to you and rape you. That's a much rarer thing. Usually a parent, a sibling, a cousin, an uncle,
right.
a stepfather, mother, a stepchild. It could go the other way too, but it's usually someone who has access and physical power over that person. Where there won't be accountability. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's the ingredients. How do you do it? So this is one of the trickiest works because the amount of pain, I believe everyone needs to process as much pain as they can while balancing, meaning in the right doses. Because if you take on too much pain at once, you'll drown.
Yeah.
If you don't process any pain, which most people try to do, I would say, they try to just shut out all of the pain. That doesn't work either. It catches up to you. it ends up sucking out the life out of you. And also, you don't have access to your wisdom. You don't feel good because you're not fulfilled, because you're not listening to the parts of yourself that are advocating for those needs, because you've shut down those parts of yourselves. So it doesn't work. Either drowning doesn't work, and the other extreme of just shutting it down, that doesn't either work, because you're shutting out a part of yourself. You can't shut it down. It's not optional. It doesn't work well for you. It backfires. It catches up eventually. So what we need to try to do in our lives is to do this kind of parallel process of functionality, meaning survival, day-to-day, short-term and long-term, and then also of the optimization, fulfillment, self-actualization of the long-term. And that occurs from processing our pain that is linked to all these negative emotions. And that way we gain full access to every part of ourselves and the full wisdom that our experiences are provide us.
What does that processing look like? What is it?
Okay, so I say Nasri. So give a formula. People like formulas. Okay. Notice, accept, sit, respect, integrate. So notice it means, okay, I'm feeling angry and I'm feeling sad. Okay. And I'm also feeling special. Okay, now, so then accept it. So first thing, many people, the one of our defenses, good defenses, because the defense is meant to help us not take on too much of that pain all at once. So we need to deny it, delude ourselves, etc., which we all do, every one of us to differing degrees. So we need to accept it. Okay, this is true and this is real. These are parts of myself that are talking. Then you need to sit with them. So sit with them, take out your little tea set and drink some coffee. You know, give out some herring and crackers, you know, and just hear them out and make sure they're fully heard. And hearing them out, some people like hear them out like this, like, yeah. Okay, now there's the door. <That's>, yeah, it's like one of these marketers that you're like, you get on the phone with them and they're like, you're like trying to be polite and you're like, you know,
get off the phone.
Right? Yeah. And they're like, so do you want our bonus package? You know, and you're like, no. So it's not like that. It's more like a friend. See it as like a friend that's trying to get, knows that there's something really important that you need to hear. And he's trying to get through to you. So hear him. So that's where the respect comes in. You need to respect and trust, really, that what he's saying is useful to you. Either you don't need to listen to exactly what he's saying. That's not the point. The point is you need to hear where he's coming from, because where he's coming from is something that's important for you to understand. And to even if you don't address it now, but to address it in the long term. That's why you need to hear it. This is what it means to be internal leadership. To be a leader, you need to find the right place for everyone in your business. You're the CEO of this business. You need to find how do I take every one of part of myself's strengths and bring them and put them in the right places where they're fully optimized, where their strengths are going to be fully utilized and to make the maximum impact, because they're also on the same team. They're on your team. They're not the enemy. They're your friends. They're there for you. They're there to help you get further in your life. So notice, accept, sit with them. Then respect them, meaning understand that they're coming from a good place. Try to figure out where they're coming from. What is that unaddressed need that they are advocating for? You could listen to their direct advice or not. And then integrate it. Integrate it into your decision, meaning make it one consideration among many to do. In the short term, you don't need to listen to its direct advice. In the long term, you must find a way to address its need and not neglect any aspect of yourself. And that's the role of leadership, which is very hard because leaders, you have the accountant that's saying we need to balance the books. And then you have the marketing team that says we need to double our marketing bid here to meet our deadline, you know, for our sales profit for our presentation to our investors. And it's the same thing inside of us. We have the anger that's saying break out, attack back. And then we have our freeze response, which is saying conflict is a bad idea here. They're stronger than me. Let's just freeze and hopefully they won't see us as a threat going forward, or that they will only abuse us a little bit and then eventually get bored with us and move on, which many times happens. If I fight back, then they may find a hunt and may find more of a thrill to it. So to balance these two voices of dichotomous voices, that's what I call it, or, you know, a dualism that occurs, is that you're going to end up having, it's yes or no. So you need to go with one of them or find a compromise, but it's not always going to be a compromise and find a way to address where it was coming from, its long-term need.
So could you take a hypothetical person, you know, a story of, you know, and walk us through that Nasri with somebody who's had sexual trauma, sexual abuse?
I can. So here's the thing, though. So I would not, something of this nature, this is too direct of an approach to it.
Okay.
What I would do is that usually the people have this, there's a certain pervasive disempowerment that makes a person come stuck or they're mm-hmm. so laden with shame, etc. In many ways, you'd call them broken, but that's not the right term, right? Because broken has the implication that you need someone else to fix them.
Yeah.
Which they don't. Everyone, quote unquote, fixes themselves. So I wouldn't take such a direct approach. I would go through a system of having them feel slightly more comfortable in conflict with me. So let's say it would happen in a more playful environment in a very safe way. So it'd be like, oh, I came on the call late today. How does that feel to you? They'd be like, oh, that was fine. I'm like, was it? I know I wouldn't be fine with that. I would be very upset if someone came on the call late. And she'd be like, okay. Or he or she would say, oh, well, actually, I actually didn't like it so much. And that's like the first foray into a conflict situation those experiences build. And suddenly I'm saying, well, I have my interpretation for you. And I think that this is because of this trauma and this process of the past and this thing. And she'd be like, nah, that's off. And I'll be like, whoa, where did that come from? I'll be like, yes, good. We're getting there. So eventually, so through this process, I trust the person's unconscious implicitly. And there's a very good reason why people defend themselves from processing that experience, because it'll be overwhelming for them and they're not ready for that yet. Mm-hmm. They first need to kind of rebuild their sense of self, their sense that their self exists, that their self is important, that they are valued, that they have something to contribute to the world, that they have competencies, they have strengths, and that they can survive conflict, first lower levels and higher levels. They can compete, they can challenge, and then as they can create that comfort, then over time, it will come up naturally, and suddenly they will want to engage in that. And this is the way. We're not, again, defenses are not meant to be overcome or navigated around or rolling with the resistance, as like people like to say, you know, roll. It's like trying the way to maneuver around it.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that. I believe that if you're carrying a shield, you're meant to be carrying a shield. Defenses are meant to be received, not to be broken through. And the purpose of my role is to help a person feel safe enough that, you know what, let's take a peek without the shield. Let's hold it down for a second. Okay, put it back up. And then slowly over time, where they feel that they are ready to lower those shields to then do this processing work again, and also in the right doses, because the amount of pain, they take it in all at once. We can't absorb all our reality all at once. If we did, we would just crash.
Yeah.
So we need to take it in the right doses. And that's where a professional can help see like exactly where it is up to. Sometimes a defense gets activated and then I could find, you know what, let's discuss this defense. And sometimes I'll be like, you know what, let's back off to respect the boundary of that defense. And sometimes it'll be like, I'll try to push further and be like, you know what, let's see what happens if we don't listen to this defense. You know, so it's a very intuitive, it's in the moment that there needs to be this decision making. But that type of direct approach of mastery, in a sense, is a little bit more theoretical and more like how the client molds it and how they would do it for themselves. Yeah. Not like I would say, okay, let's go through the five steps of mastery. Especially for something that would be this sensitive. It's a way of knowing how to address and receive the defenses in a way where the defenses are heard, but also what they're protecting is eventually processed.
So part of what I hear you saying, I think, is that you are, I want to say coaxing, but that might not be quite the right word, but helping a client develop these different parts of themselves in real time in the current day in small ways, the ability to be upset or to challenge or to advocate for their needs, or I would imagine now going to sex, to be able to access some desire or feel pleasure or have some choice or have an ability to set a boundary, you know, in incremental ways now that maybe strengthens them, their self in the current day, right? Which might open up to processing the past if they need to.
They do need to. And we all need to differing degrees. But what happens with people like this, oftentimes they become stuck because mm-hmm. the sense of disempowerment freezes the entire processing process.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. The whole thing, the whole system gets frozen and they're just stuck. So when the sense of empowerment, the sense that fighting back is a possibility, not that you're eager and like, rah, 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 right? Not like that, but in a sense that there's some like a cool sense of confidence. Well, if you push me too much, I will beat you up. I will fight back.
Yeah.
That's a possibility in your head. And that energy is given off in social interactions, especially amongst men, but I think women to lesser extent. To bring back this possibility, I like to say that our sessions are like, so we have a group as well. We have individual and group. The advantage of group is has something very powerful in that regard, because it gives up space, a staging ground for a conflict to occur amongst almost kind of like peers. Mm-hmm. And where it could create, like, it's like a transference, meaning where that parallel relationship gets inserted into a current relationship where it doesn't quite fit, but it offers the opportunity for some type of corrective experience. Yeah. Where this time, well, it could be with me, but in some ways it's more powerful with a different group member. And yeah, I find that all the time, that people many times feel more comfortable with their group members than with me. I get very insulted, of course, which is my own thing I need to process, obviously. Right. So when that occurs, and then when I do this, is exactly what I do with my clients. There's a certain transparency, et cetera, a certain modeling of how to do that for themselves, of showing them where do things come up that interfere with the work. And I believe this transference is not something to be fought, but it offers a good opportunity that it usually you can't go back to the old experience, the old person, and get the corrective experience through them. So we do the best we can by unconsciously recreating it, the same dynamic with someone else, hoping for a corrective experience where this time I can fight back. And this time I will do something differently. This time I will protect myself, set the boundary, stand my ground, whatever that corrective experience is.
Mm-hmm. But some of these corrective experiences are positive too, right? It's about pleasure. It's about desire. It's about, you know, all the parts of those voices we might have shut off too, based on trauma. Yeah.
That's what I mean by corrective, is that it, whatever was missing from before is the correction that could occur through boundaries, or it could, as you said, it could occur through pleasure, through safety, through exactly what you said, that the voices that have been shut out from before.
So how does you wrote this question, and I'm curious about it, how does your Orthodox Jewish background impact your work or your viewing of this, your perspective and your process?
Well, it gives me confidence for this approach. Because from a Jewish perspective, the term trait or characteristic is the same word as the Jewish word for measurement, meaning that the characteristics and traits are meant to be in the right measurement. There's nothing that doesn't have a measurement. So what we view as negative traits, quote unquote, and positive traits, in my view, are going to be something that where it's more context, usually more of a dose that to apply them to. And negative traits are usually less of a dose and less context, generally speaking. So there's no such thing as, so to me, first, number one, it gives me a confidence in what I'm doing. It gives me a sense of trust that every part of us is a gift. So again, it helps me feel more secure in this approach. It also, I don't want to go too deep here, but there's like two dimensions to the world that I see things through. Through like the physical dimension and like the spiritual dimension. So like say the physical dimension is like the survival, you know, of the world. And the spiritual dimension is like more like where God, what I should call Hashem, resides. And that dimension is where everything is perfect. There's no such thing as injustice. And everything is good. There's no time, space, limitation, boundaries. It's just, there's unity. And only thing really that truly exists would be God, Hashem. And then there's the our dimension that has these boundaries, limitations, exertion, death, suffering. There's all these boundaries and separateness. And I believe that the only true way, the only way that either domain makes sense is if we live in them both at the same time. So I that sounds like, you know, I wanted to say it just for that, for the sake of saying that, but just to be clever, which is probably partly true. But what I mean is, because if we were to just believe that everything is just and everything's okay, then we would not be motivated to do anything. God got it covered. Everything's good. We're all good. I don't need to heal others. I don't need to process others. They'll get their healing or processing no matter what. God's plan will, or they won't, but that will be for their ultimate good anyway. So why do I need to intervene? So it would basically lead to complete inaction if I were to lead in life totally in sync with the godly plan. And if I were to live totally in this plane, then what would happen is that I would be inundated with the chaos and destruction of the world. There's no anchor point for anything. There's just me. The world is meaningless. It's just a world that's full of this death and destruction without purpose, without organization, without leading to anything. It's just mm-hmm. meaningless. So to live in that world, it's not a world that I would want to live in.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is this is a kind of a rough breakdown, but I think it works enough for what most people do. In the world of action, we usually live in this world, and usually in the world of mindset or understanding, we live in the other world. I mean, we'll help someone with understanding that we're not the one that needed to help them, because they would have been helped yes or no, regardless. And it wasn't us, it was God. But on the other hand, we do help them and we carry it. And then one way we interact with them as if there would be no one else in the whole wide world who would help them. So this is like kind of my perspective. And in terms of like navigating the like, why do good things happen to bad people? Bad things happen to good people. And not being crushed with all the suffering that people put on me so I don't burn out as a professional.
Yeah.
But at the same time, be a professional and do and interact with others as if there wasn't someone that would ultimately do what's there for their good, regardless of what I would do, which is true also as well.
And I suppose for any person who's processing trauma, who's experienced that, we've got if the world's just sort of bad, dangerous, chaotic, no purpose, that doesn't help you heal, you know, and yet we can't just also sit there and not do anything. You know, there's a mixture, right? Mindset and action that I think is appropriate for people.
Yeah. And the mindset is crucial because otherwise, is this a life worth living? That becomes a very serious question when if there's no purpose, there's no world to come, there's no soul, there's no essence, there's no ultimate meaning, there's no authority.
Yeah. Or no,
there's
hope.
No anchor points.
Yeah.
Right. Hope. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Right. Hope. That's a major one. If you live in a plane where there's God, and there's no such thing as no hope because ultimately there never was anything to really doubt the hope either. Nothing's changed in terms of God's plan for bringing you to your ultimate good, regardless of your decisions, by the way. I call that God is he's the chess master. That you can make all your choices, right? But at the end of the day, the thing that God wants will happen, he'll get the checkmate. You could do any move. You could start with the French defense, the Scandinavian defense, the Queen's Gambit. It doesn't matter. It's going to be a checkmate. So ultimately, there's nothing that you can do that will make it that, oh, God would have had a plan, but now not. The checkmate will happen and create the order and goodness in your life, regardless of what your decisions are. And ultimately, that becomes just integrated within God's plan, just like in the chess master, that your moves become integrated within his plan to get the checkmate. Your moves, even if they're bad moves, will become integrated in bringing about God's end result, which luckily for you is not killing your king, but giving you the ultimate pleasure of an infinite sense of self and creating yourself in this world of self-actualizing yourself, fulfilling every part of yourself. So luckily that's what God's plan is, and that will be fulfilled regardless of how you go about your life. So that's just a comforting and hopeful thought, as you said.
Yeah. And as I'm thinking about all the various people that might be listening to this with all different schemas around God and spirituality and beliefs and everything else, I think distilling it down to there is hope and mindset and action, and both of those things matter, however people want to apply that, I think is really powerful. So yes. Where can people find you, learn more about you? You know, do you have a website or anything to share that people might want to reach out?
Absolutely. So you could check me out at coachbensonfox.com. Online presence, anything will be under at Coach Benson Fox. Email me, wait for it, results@coachbensonfox.com. And yes, so for any of your listeners, I can offer you a free half-hour consultation, which we would figure out if my program, which has individual, group, and a video course that has my PsyD education in it to guide you, if this approach resonates and you want to see how would it apply for you or have any questions about it, take me up on it. It's free. Why not? And I won't, there's no commitment from that. And that's something I could offer, a free gift for all of your listeners. Or you could just go on coachbensonfox.com, just get the free content. You don't need to talk to me and listen to all the podcast appearances that I've had on there and all my quotes and articles, etc., video testimonials that are there as well. And let's see what opportunities and possibilities we could create for ourselves to create balance in our lives.
Great. Thank you. That's very generous, a free consult. So I'll put all those links in the show notes too, so that people don't have to be trying to write this down as they're driving or something. So.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.